Hello, Internet! Welcome to episode 24 of the Assorted Calibers podcast, the Second Amendment podcast that has a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard, and with me as always is my hostess, Erin Paulette. How are you doing, Erin?
I've been self-medicating because it's been one of those headache days. So, yeah, Tylenol, Advil, and rum. Oh, my.
That's somewhat similar to what's going on. Actually, I have a bottle of wine that a friend of mine made for me, and it's sitting in my refrigerator all nice and chilled. And I'm like, you know what? I might tap into that. And then today happened, and I'm just like, yeah, definitely ibuprofen and Manhattan.
And apparently an ice pack directly to your butthole.
My butthole?
Yes. Come on. You were talking about that before we went live, about how you had a jalapeno for breakfast.
Oh,
and then you said, ding, 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 your poop is ready. And you suddenly had to run downstairs and had a burning sensation in your nethers.
Yes, that is absolutely true. Well, we were talking about a lot of stuff. For those who listen to the blooper reels know that we go way off the reservation. So I'm like, what reference are you talking about? I might have made a pegging joke.
Oh, you absolutely did, honey. You absolutely did.
But I got some jalapenos on sale at the grocery store, and they're starting to get all orange and nice, but that also means they're going to quickly get moldy and awful. So I'm like, quick, got to use these up. So yeah, I made some microwavable muffin thing. It's a recipe. Look up egg mug muffin. I made one of those, and I dice up some onion and a fresh jalapeno and threw that all together. And it was absolutely delectable, though I was definitely sweating when it was all done, but it was the good kind of sweating. But then, yeah, this afternoon, it was the bad kind of sweating. But I'm better now.
Was it the kind of bowel movement where you feel like your butt was actually vomiting into the toilet?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't that bad. It was spirited and lively. I don't think our listeners want to hear anything about this.
Well, probably not. My filter's turned down way low.
Though that being said, we got a lot of positive feedback about last week's show, which we were kind of crossing our fingers on.
Yeah, and, so apparently we were setting our standards way too high and making far too much work for ourselves. We should just phone it in every week.
Just so you know, folks, we have a full house this week. That is not going to happen. This Assorted Calibers podcast has a set of standards, but there will be times when we might deviate from those standards, such as the previous week when everybody called in sick, or next week when we are going to be at the Gun Rights Policy Conference. So we're going to do another live recording like we did at the NRA.
Well, that is a natural segue if I've ever heard one, Weird. So our main topic is the upcoming Gun Rights Policy Conference. And if you are one of our super cool Patreon patrons, we love you. You will actually be hearing this before the conference. And if you're just one of our regular listeners, who we like as a friend, then you'll be hearing this after the fact. I want to make a little bit of an announcement. I will be dropping a bombshell worth of news at GRPC when I give my speech on Sunday. So if you're a subscriber and you're listening to this, you better pay attention. And if you can't make it, it's going to be recorded by the Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns guys. And I believe it's going to be live streamed on the Second Amendment Foundation's page on Facebook. And afterwards, assuming YouTube isn't, well, its usual picky, censorious self, they should be able to upload segments. And if you miss it, you'll be able to see it then. Now, if you're hearing this after the fact, if you're hearing this on Monday, wow, that was a heck of an announcement, wasn't it? Right? I mean, it took you completely by surprise. I know, me too. It's awesome.
It took me by surprise as well.
Yeah, I haven't told you. I haven't told most people because it's a secret. It's going to be a surprise.
I like surprises.
Oh, you're going to be very surprised. I would actually encourage you to use the bathroom before my segment, just so you don't lose bowel integrity. Yeah.
That's okay. I'll keep a Mountain Dew bottle handy.
Awesome. Awesome. So, yeah, we are headed to Chicago this weekend, and I'm getting there a bit early because I have been invited to be a speaker on a panel for AmCon. Now, for people who have been living under a rock, AmCon is the alternate mass media conference, which is hosted by a Polite Society host and I think founder, Paul Lathrop. And last year was its very first year of existence, and it's the conference before the conference. JRPC starts officially Friday night with the reception, and so Friday morning and afternoon is AmCon, and people who are in alternate media, like podcasting, blogs, that sort of thing. YouTube, although less so this year than last year, but people who are media creators, but they aren't like on regular television, they aren't big name journalists, that sort of thing. They go there to sort of have a masterclass on what it's like to be in the media from other people, some tips, some tricks. Here's how to increase your audience. Here's how to monetize content. Here's how to do this. Here's how to do that. And I went last year and it was great. This year, I have been asked to be on a panel, and so I will be speaking then. And so if you are attending AmCon, you really need to be there between 2:30 and 3:30, because I will be on a panel with the ever eloquent Tiffany Johnson and the enviously beautiful Sarah Cade, along with a gentleman I have never met before, Kevin Dixie. And our panel is called Beyond the Choir. And you might have guessed from the panel name or from the names of the contributors, it's essentially how to talk to people who aren't white and heterosexual is really what it is. How do you talk to gay people about guns? How do you talk to black people? How do you do this? And, I'm going to be on it, and I'm going to be, I guess, I don't know what kind of questions I'm going to be asked, but it's probably going to be, so Aaron, I'm straight and I'm a gun owner, and how do I talk to gay people about guns? So that'll be interesting. Of course, you aren't going to be there for that, are you, weird?
I may make it in time. My flight lands at 2:30, so I'm going to go as quick as I can. And because it's Chicago, I don't need to check a bag. So I'll hop off the plane and grab myself an Uber to the hotel as quickly as I can.
You might make it, yeah. Okay. I mean, it helps that the hotel is literally next door. It's called the Hyatt Regency O'Hare, and it's the O'Hare Airport, so it ought to be really, really close.
I actually may need to look that up. I might be able to, like, catch an airport shuttle of some sort instead of having to take an Uber.
Well, I don't know how they're doing it this year, but last year, there were airport shuttles provided by the hotel specifically for GRPC. So even if the hotel normally doesn't do it, and I would think that it would, I'm pretty sure that the hotel will be doing it for conference attendees. So I think you'll be able to get there. I just don't know what time they leave, whether it's like every 15 minutes, every hour. I don't know. Worth looking into.
Cool, cool. So is there anything I need to know or bring or do? Because this is going to be my first GRPC.
Yeah. All right. So the big difference between GRPC and NRA is at NRA, you wander around and you look at things and you get to pick them up and inspect them and you buy stuff and you go and you'll sit in on some panels. GRPC is a lot like a college class in that it starts in the morning. And you will periodically have breaks to use the bathroom, get a drink of water, but it's a working lunch, and it runs pretty much from 8 in the morning until, 6 p.m. on Saturday. And Sunday, it starts a little bit later, starts at 8:30, and then it runs until like 1 p.m. And really, it's just, it's a whole bunch of people, in a ballroom, a conference room, and you've got the tables set out and you got the chairs next to them, and you're going to have a ton of free books. So, Weird, make sure that there's room in your luggage to bring back a couple of pounds worth of book swag.
Cool. I like book swag.
And so you go in, you sit down, you listen to people give presentations, you applaud. Now, I'm going to warn people, not all of the presentations will be interesting to you. They will not all be to your liking. You will have bad speakers. You will have boring subjects. So bring something else you can do quietly, like your cell phone, so you can surf the web or text your friends. If you're the kind of person who needs to get up frequently, like you need to use the bathroom a lot, or you frequently need to stand and stretch your legs, what you want to do is you want to get there early, and you want to get a seat either in the very back or on the ends of the aisles so that you can get up without bothering people, because otherwise you're going to be doing that crab walk as you're presenting either your ass or your crotch to people as you sort of sideways out.
I believe etiquette says present the crotch.
So when you go, you are going to want to bring some sort of electronic entertainment device. Get there early if you need to stretch your legs or use the bathroom a lot. If you're the kind of person who wants to take notes, you'll want to bring something. If you kick it old school, pen and paper. A lot of people will bring a laptop or a tablet. If you bring one of those, bring a battery backup if possible, because you aren't likely to be near an outlet. And so I have several portable batteries in the candy bar size, and I'll be using that for my tablet. You can actually record the presentations, although, like I said, you've got people who are professionally recording it. The Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns boys are recording it in like 4K. So unless you really, really need something verbatim, it's not necessary. Some people are going to ask about the dress code. Now, there isn't actually a dress code, but there are several people there who are going to be giving presentations, so they're going to be dressed nicely. The gentlemen are usually going to be in suits or, at the very least, sports coats and ties. The women are going to be wearing nice dresses, skirts and blouses. So while there's nothing preventing you from showing up in jeans and a t-shirt, if you are the kind of person who feels out of place, underdressed when meeting people, you maybe want to dress a little bit nicely, because I know that there are some people in our friends list who are coming. They're coming to meet me. They're coming to meet you, Weird. They're coming to meet, well, I don't know if they're specifically coming to meet these people, but they have the opportunity to meet some really cool people like Alan Gottlieb, Dr. John Lott. And so it's kind of embarrassing to go up to someone you admire who's dressed really nicely and you're there looking like a schlub. And so I would advise our male listeners that if they just wear khakis and a polo shirt, that will serve them absolutely perfectly. They don't need to dress up any further than that. They can be comfortable. They can look nice. They'll fit in just fine.
Well, there, I'm going to dig out the khakis and the polo shirts. I got those somewhere.
And just to finish wrapping this up, because I've been doing a whole bunch of talking, my big announcement is at 10:45 on Sunday morning. And it's titled Growing Gun Rights in the LG... Oh my god, they misspelled it. LBGT community, they said. So again, I'm on the gay panel. Woo! All right, so funny story, because I hear Weird sighing and annoyance. Last year, I don't know if he's here this year or not, I haven't checked, but last year, Maj Touré was there. I don't know if you've ever heard Maj speak, but he has the ability to get right to the heart of something in a way that's kind of embarrassing and rather blunt. He was on a panel with a whole bunch of black people. And I don't remember what was titled, but it was something like outreach or whatever. And he gave a very quick speech, and then he opened the floor up to questions. And one of the first people asked him, it was the equivalent of, Maj, I'm a white person, how do I talk to black people about guns? Or what can we do to ease racial tension or something like that? And Maj looked around a bit. He says, y'all are going to hate me for saying this. He says, look around. Why am I on the black panel? Why is there a black panel? Why can't I be on a panel with people of other races and other genders? Why are you putting me in the ghetto? And the tension, you could cut with a knife. And people were going, oh, geez. Feeling very uncomfortable. And then I'm going, oh, you just wait until Sunday, because then you'll have the gay panel and the women panel. Oh my god, oh my god, I just found it here on the schedule. Okay, he's again on Saturday, and it's 4:45, Gun Rights Outreach Initiative, and it looks like it's the same panel as last year. Rick Ector, Rhonda Ezell, Maj Touré, Marcus Allen Weldon. It's just gonna be epic if he does something like this again this year.
I can't wait.
There's something really awesome that I'm going to be doing, as opposed to the big announcement I'm making. And this will actually segue really nicely into your segment, because you're talking, again, about the 3D printed guns. And I have in my possession the Liberator Codebook.
Nice.
Which, for people who don't know what this is, there's a friend of mine who compiled this book, and he published it under a pen name, so I'm not going to out him. But what he did was he pulled a Phil Zimmerman with the PGP encryption thing. And so he took the 3D code printing for the Liberator. He basically just printed it out into a book format, wrote an introduction, and put it up on Amazon, literally making it a First Amendment issue. And it sold out the first printing, it sold out the second printing, and, well, I don't know if they actually sold out in the second printing, or if Amazon realized what was going on, because this made the news on, I think, Forbes. And the person who was writing the article called up Amazon for comment, and Amazon, they didn't know what was going on. And by the time they figured out what was going on, they shut that sucker down. So my friend is now looking into alternate means of publishing, Lulu, I think, or Gumroad or something like that. But I have one of the few copies, and I have heard, and this is really not confirmed because the gentleman's very busy, Cody Wilson of Defense Distributed is going to be there. Even if he wasn't, I was still planning on doing this. I've got pens, and I am going to have people who are influential in the gun rights movement. I'm going to have them autograph this. This is sort of the gun rights version of the Declaration of Independence, where, you know, we all sign it with a flourish. And that's so, awesome. You know, I'm going to sign it because it's my idea, and I'm a little bit of a big deal, but I'm going to have Alan Gottlieb sign it, and I'm going to have Dr. John Lott sign it, and I'm going to have Maj Touré sign it. I'm going to have whoever I think is a recognizable name and who is willing to sign it. And I've even got some of the metallic pens because it's a black cover. And what I want to do is I want to get Cody Wilson to autograph the cover, and I want my friend who compiled it to autograph the cover. And I'm not really sure what I'm going to do with it afterwards, because I at that point it stops being a book and it's just sort of a trophy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have it just to have it. And maybe at some point, I may need to raffle it off in order to get money. But I will have really increased its value. And I just think it's going to be a cool thing to have this book, this gun, quote unquote, signed by movers and shakers within the gun rights community. I think it's going to be really awesome.
Well, to be fair, on the trophy line, like, unless you're the dudes for the Matrix, like, you're not sitting down and doing some light reading on that. Blonde, brunette, redhead.
Yeah, it's a surprisingly short read, because once you get past the introduction, it's all just machine code. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make sure that nobody actually signs over the code, because that's critically important. You still need to be able to use this to manufacture the pistol. And the way you do that is, well, you'd have to destroy the book by slicing out each page and scanning it. But still, it needs to maintain the ability to be used like that. But there's all sorts of blank pages at the beginning, at the end, the inside covers. There's all sorts of space. So unless people are doing really massive signatures, I should be able to accommodate everybody. And it's going to be awesome. And you know what, Weird? because I like you, I'm going to let you sign it too.
Oh, I love it. Except for my signature is horrible. I'm such messy handwriting. All right. It is time to shift some gears because let me tell you, I think it's time for another giveaway, Aaron.
Ooh, what are we giving away?
So I was cruising around through the various knife sites that I do, and I just, you know, late at night, maybe I'm done editing a podcast, and I just go, oh, let's go look on the knife sites and see what they've got and see what looks interesting. And literally that's what I did, is I saw a knife and I went, oh, that looks interesting. So what I've got here in my hand is a Columbia River Hammond Cruiser, and it's got a lot of checkbox that I like, is I like the shape of it. I like the style of it. It's a flipper style knife. So it's a folder and it's got the flipper. So that's a little paddle that's off the front side of the blade. And you push on that and, oh, listen to that. It just pops out. It's made by Columbia River and I love their stuff, CRKT, but it's got their locks system. Not their auto locks, which I despise because I hate it when a safety engages automatically. Just like I hate those double-barreled shotguns where you open them up and the shells eject and then the safety's on. And so you put the new shells in and you close it up and you point it at things and the trigger doesn't work. Ugh. Or in the case of their auto locks knives, it takes one hand to deploy. It takes three hands to put it away. No fun.
So this is the 3¾-inch blade made out of, 18 CR 14 MOV stainless steel. That's the same steel that's used in Mora knives, because it's something like 8 chromium, 14 molybdenum vanadium alloy. That's some good stuff.
I'm glad you said that because I don't know my steel. It's all word salad. Like, I was literally looking at this spec sheet that's going to be in the show notes here. And I'm just like, I don't even know, like, which ones do I read on this? Because I don't know my steel. I had a very, very good friend who was a knife maker, and he would talk for ages about steel. And then we've got many of the same friends who are complete knife fanatics. And if you're listening to this, yes, I do want to hear your knife segment. Give us a knife segment.
Oddball.
I'm calling out Oddball. And so, yeah, I'm glad to know it's good steel. I know that it is at least very, very serviceable steel because, so yeah, you said it's 3¼-inch blade. Like when it showed up, I went, oh, I forgot to look at the length of this thing. It's a big knife.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit bigger than what I like to carry, though I have carried this a bunch of times because it's nice. It's handy, but it's really, really good for, I'm mowing my lawn. The other day I was picking apples in an apple orchard and I noticed that there was a giant pokeweed growing out from underneath one of the apple trees. And I'm like, there's kids here and this thing is poisonous. And so I chopped it down with my knife. And I've done lots of chopping of things and cutting of things and all of that. And I actually looked at the blade the other day and there was a whole bunch of notches and things like that. It just from sheer abuse. And I took it over an Arkansas stone and I think I just used the Arkansas stone. I might have used a little bit of a diamond stone and took the notches right out and it's back to beautiful sharpness. And it's just the knife was all covered with all sorts of horrible residues and there was no signs of rusting and pitting. Like I'm really liking this knife. It is holding up very, very well. And it's got the thing that really interested me on it is it's got finger grooves in it. Full disclosure, I'm the guy that I've got most of my revolvers have finger grooves in the handle and they don't bother me at all. I'm not one of those people that's bothered by finger grooves, though I will say the finger grooves on this are very, very minimalist. But they do give you a really, really much more positive purchase than you do on most folding knives.
And you do have a finger stop up front, which is really important with a knife like this.
Yeah, though I must say that's actually the one thing that I like, but I also don't like, because on a flipper knife, the actual flipper flips around to become a finger stop. So it does that. And actually it gives you a little less access to the flipper. I like to close a flipper by grabbing onto the flipper and pushing it down. And you can still do that with this, but there's a little less purchase than that.
What color is the Zytel handle for the one you're giving away?
It is black.
Well, black goes with everything.
Yes. So yeah, I found these. I found them at a pretty good deal, and I decided, you know what? I like this knife. I'm going to grab a bunch of them. So I have decided that on October 12th, I'm going to give away three of these to our patron members at the $4 level or higher.
Wow. So not just one, but three given away. That's awesome.
Three of them. Yeah. Because I thought, all right, we gave away a lower. we can't just go, okay, now I'm going to give away a knife. So I'm going to give away three. So there's three of you that are going to be very, very happy people. And the rest of you, hopefully maybe you're going to look at it and go, you know what? I liked it so much. I'm going to grab it.
Well, there will definitely be a Amazon link to this knife so you can see for yourself what kind of characteristics it has. Looks like it's a very nice knife.
I like it. Like I said, I like it. And as I said in last week's episode, an EDC knife is meant to be abused. And this is definitely one of those. My big knives, my big EDC knives get abused a lot more than my smaller ones because I tend to carry them into places where like, oh no, like I'm going off into the woods. I'm going off into some place. I'm doing yard work. Oh no, this might be used to dig a hole. This might be used to chop a branch off a tree. So yeah, and it's handled it quite well. So I think it will serve anybody who gets it very, very well.
And if you are one of the lucky listeners who wins it, we want to hear back from you. I mean, we don't need like a full-scale product review of it, although if you want to record one, that would be awesome. We'd love it. But just let us know. Give us some feedback. You know, something like, hey, Weird and Aaron, I've had this for a month. I've done all sorts of crazy things with it. I really like it. I highly recommend it. Something like that. That'd be really cool. So please let us know.
Now, the general purpose Egghead returns with some more gun physics. This time he shows how to test out the claims of unorthodox ammunition to see if it really is the next greatest thing.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to General Purpose Egghead. It has been a couple of weeks since I had a segment out. I do apologize for the delay. Life catches up to you sometimes, and work has been keeping me pretty busy. But I am back again, and this week we are going to continue our discussion of ballistics and tying it into physics with real numbers. And this week we're going to talk about the application in terminal ballistics when the bullet strikes the target. This is going to be a simplified discussion. Ballistics is a complicated field that I have only very lightly grazed the surface of myself. But this is going to be the kind of thing that can help you see if a product passes the sniff test, if what they're advertising is even plausible. And they're sort of useful rules of thumb to go by. Because no matter how wonderful a product may claim to be, it can't violate the laws of physics. No amount of marketing pixie dust is going to get you to violate Newtonian physics. So as we discussed in the last segment, projectiles have both kinetic energy and momentum. The shooter's end of the equation is mostly determined by momentum. That's going to be the recoil that the shooter feels. But the target's end of the equation is more influenced by kinetic energy. It's a law of physics that energy can't be created or destroyed, but it can only be changed from one form to another. So when a bullet strikes a target, it's carrying a certain amount of kinetic energy, and that energy has to be dissipated as heat or movement or some other form. And that is what goes into actually causing damage to the target. So how bullets perform can be characterized by three things relating to your energy. The first is how much energy did you start with? The second is how much energy did you lose? And the third is how did you spend whatever energy you had left? So let's go through those one by one. First, how much energy did you start with? So in terms of wounding potential, obviously more energy is more better. But the question is, how much momentum can you comfortably handle in your firearm, and how much kinetic energy does that buy you based on your bullet weight and velocity? In a perfect world where we were not constrained by momentum, we would all be walking around with 50 BMG strength handguns that had the kick of a 22, but that is not really the case. And sometimes you just can't handle a 44 Magnum comfortably, or a 22 is very nice to shoot, but just doesn't have what you need. So the second component is how much energy did you lose? ideally, all of the energy that you started with, i.e. all of the energy in the bullet that came out of your barrel, is going to go into the target. But you're going to have some losses along the way, and there's a couple of ways that can happen. So you will have some energy lost as wind resistance. It'll be transferred to the air as movement and heat and sound. At close range, this usually isn't a big deal. There's not enough time for wind to act on the bullet to reduce its power by any significant amount. But at long range rifle shooting, this can be a big factor. The most common way for you to waste some energy is for it to not go into the target because the bullet exited the target, carrying whatever energy it had left with it. This is exactly what happens if you shoot full metal jacket, and is why everyone prefers jacketed hollow points. If the bullet leaves the back of the target, that's energy that could have been spent in the target that is instead wasted on the wall behind them, we hope, and not the little lady walking her dog. So clearly, overpenetration is to be avoided. You can also have energy lost by penetrating intermediate barriers. So if you have to shoot through a windshield, or your target is wearing thick, heavy clothing, or anything of that nature, or like a thick hide on an animal, that is going to waste some of your energy as well, instead of actually wounding whatever you're shooting at, to just going into getting to that target in the first place. So after all of these losses, whatever energy is left is what is imparted to the target as actual damage. And now we get to our third question, which is how do you want to spend that energy? And this is usually a question of penetration versus expansion. So varmint bullets and certain defensive rounds favor expansion pretty heavily. They don't penetrate very deeply, but in that very shallow amount of penetration, they do massive amounts of damage. All of the kinetic energy the bullet has is expended in the first, maybe 6 or 8 inches of penetration, if that. So they won't go far, but the distance they do penetrate, it's pretty devastating. This is great for small game, where the animal you're shooting at is only 6 or 12 inches thick to begin with, or in situations where a major concern is shooting through a bad guy and into bystanders. It doesn't do well for large game, however, because the vital organs, the ones that are going to let that big bear or moose or whatever maul and or trample you to death, are going to be a little deeper than 4 to 6 inches into the target. So if you have ammo that expends all its energy before it hits the vital organs, you're really just going to piss off that big animal instead of putting it down humanely and quickly. So this is where your hunting ammunition comes in. A lot of hunting ammunition for big game is designed to penetrate extremely deeply. It takes that energy and expends it a little more slowly. So it's going to have, instead of a very wide, shallow wound cavity, a much deeper wound cavity that is not nearly as wide. And it's a consequence of physics that you can either have a very wide, shallow wound cavity or a very long, deep wound cavity for a given amount of energy. You can't get both without having more energy to begin with. So most of the time, you're going to want to strike a balance between these two extremes. Most hunting ammunition or defensive ammunition is hollow point or soft point, but is also designed not to completely fragment like varmint rounds, so it strikes a balance between expansion and penetration, which is exactly what you want. And the kind of ammo you're going to want for hunting something large like elk or bear is going to be a little suboptimal on something smaller like a white-tailed deer or varmints, just because if it penetrates deeply, it's not going to do a lot of damage up front, and vice versa. So that's the background information. So now let's look at a couple of case studies. The first one is one that's made the rounds on social media and a couple of gun blogs. It's the RIP ammo. Stands for Radically Invasive Projectile, just in case you were wondering. And they have rather lurid marketing campaigns that I'm personally not a big fan of. And it is a nasty-looking bullet, I'm not going to lie. You take a look at it and it's pretty scary. But let's take a look at the actual performance of it and the actual numbers. So the first thing that raised my eyebrows was you have these very sharp points on it, and they claim it has a hole saw effect. It was referred to as a flying hole saw. This doesn't even pass the sniff test. Bullet twist rates are something like one complete revolution in 7 to 15 inches of space, depending on the twist rate of the gun it's being fired out of. So yeah, in the microsecond where that bullet contacts the actual surface it's hitting, it's not going to be rotating much at all. It might rotate 1 or 2 degrees, perhaps, so it's certainly not going to hole saw. So let's just completely disregard that one. But if they're going to lie to us about that, what else might they lie to us about? So let's look at the actual ballistics of the projectile. It is a 48-grain bullet, and the muzzle velocity is supposed to be 1,260 feet per second. So that's an extremely light projectile moving at pretty standard speeds. A plus P 9mm bullet is going to be a 124-grain bullet at 1,150 to 1,200 feet per second. So you've got 100 to maybe 50 feet per second advantage in speed with a bullet that weighs a little over a third of the weight. So let's run the actual numbers. The kinetic energy of this bullet, the RIP, is 170 foot-pounds of kinetic energy for a 48-grain projectile at 1,260 feet per second. For reference, a standard 9mm has 370 foot-pounds, so more than twice the energy in a standard 9mm versus this one. Now, it is a much lighter bullet, so it's going to have a lot less momentum, so there'd be a lot less recoil, but this might actually be a problem as well. Virtually all handguns these days are recoil operated, so they rely upon the momentum imparted to the slide in the barrel to cycle. If there's not enough momentum, they won't cycle. This is why those little 9mm birdshot capsules have a tendency to jam in semi-autos. There's just not enough oomph in them to cycle the slide. So I really do wonder if they're going to reliably cycle, and since they cost you several dollars per round, I have doubts that people are going to run these several hundred rounds through their gun necessary to ensure that it does reliably cycle. And even if it does cycle, we still have the problem of a bullet that has less than half of the kinetic energy of a standard 9mm projectile and claims to do better. Like I said before, you can't violate the laws of physics no matter how much marketing pixie dust you scatter on your product. So I don't believe it. So let's contrast this with another Wonder Bullet with a very unconventional design, the Polycase ARX, which is now being sold as the Ruger ARX bullet. This one I find kind of interesting. It doesn't look as scary, but their claim is that the shape of the flutes on the nose, it's got almost like a jet turbine sort of look to it with these little curved flutes that look like they're going to direct air or fluid out to the side. They say that this redirecting of energy acts to decelerate the bullet and spread out the impact, and acts kind of like a hollow point. In theory, it seems plausible, and the ballistics on the cartridge are a lot better. It's another lightweight bullet, it's an 80-grain bullet, but it's clocking along at a pretty good 1,450 feet per second. So that, when you run the numbers, gives us about 370 foot-pounds, which is standard 9mm kinetic energy. So it has about the same amount of kinetic energy as a regular 9mm. And the momentum is going to be a little bit less because it's a lighter bullet that's moving much faster. So for the same amount of kinetic energy, there's less momentum. But it's not so much less that it's not likely to cycle, I would guess. I would want to test it in my gun, but it seems like it might actually function. And looking at the ballistic performance, it does seem to stop in ballistics gelatin. It penetrates about 14 inches, which is standard for 9mm. So it has about the same amount of kinetic energy, and it penetrates about the same amount of distance in the ballistics gel. So those two things together says it's performing very similarly, and the kinetic energy that it has is all getting imparted to the target, just the same as the hollow point. The question is it going to be mostly up front and then a shallow wound path like most defensive ammo, or is it going to be a more evenly distributed wound path? So it might not be radically better in terms of the ballistics, but it's certainly an innovation, and I haven't seen anything like it before, so I gotta give him props for that. I'm watching this one because this seems like a really interesting product. Anyway, I think there's more questions to be answered about it. Is it reliable? How does it distribute the energy? How does it penetrate through barriers? I'm not ready to jump ship for my trusty Spear Gold Dots, but it does look interesting, so it does at least pass the sniff test in the physics category.
Oh my god, the RIP ammo. That's just, such a bad idea.
I love how they've got their little acronym that's not Rest in Peace. Yeah, that was totally the plan all along.
I mean, they actually managed to make ammunition that was less effective than 22 long rifle. That's something. I'm not sure what it is, but it's something.
I mean, Speer also came out with that with the, well, I don't know if it was Speer. I think Speer might have bought them later with the Glazer safety slug. That was one of those like super duper trick ammo that turned out to not really work much at all.
I'm really glad that he mentioned the polycase ammo, because I remember when they first came out, it was it 2 or was it 3 years ago at NRA? It was whichever NRA was in Tennessee. That's where I first saw it. And I have been dying to find ballistics reports on them, like, you know, the gel, things like that. And I've wanted Lucky Gunner to do it, because Lucky Gunner Labs, I don't know if you know about this, they have this wonderful head-to-head where they shoot ammunition of different calibers through the gel, and they tell you how much it expands, how deep it gets, all sorts of things. You can compare your hollow point ammo. And I wanted to see something like this, and they haven't done it. They aren't likely to do it, because it's such a weird ammo. But I'm really glad he mentioned it. I'm glad he said something about it, because I look at it and it's like, okay, all the words sound good, but I'm still not sure how well this works.
Well, I'm also glad on that too, because I've definitely seen a bunch of ammo testing done of it. And unlike the other trick ammos, because like I said, there's always these ammos that come out that are the latest and greatest things. And yeah, they turn out to be No, really what you just want is a jacketed hollow point. Ever so often somebody comes out with one that works a little bit better than others. You know, I'm a huge fan of like the Spear Gold Dot. When that one came out, I was kind of a game changer. I really liked that. I mean, there's the Federal Hydra Shock was a big game changer and has since, you know, become kind of a gauche round because the world has moved on, but it really kind of push things forward in the world of jacketed hollow points. But really, the world is jacketed hollow points. And when someone has something that's different than a jacketed hollow point, you kind of got to be a little bit skeptical on what it's doing. But this one, I did not hear a lot of people blowing raspberries at it. And especially a lot of the people that like said like the RIP, yeah, that's kind of a goofy round. And then suddenly the ARX, you know, it actually kind of works. And I'm kind of surprised on that. So it might be the next greatest thing. Who knows?
I'm just glad people are innovating. I mean, even if it's awful, you won't know until you try.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that firearms is such a mature technology that things don't change. And so anytime there's something even remotely new, I'm all for it. It's like, yes, great, something new. Let's give it a try. Let's see if it's awesome. Let's see if it's crap. But let's test it.
And even a bad idea might inspire somebody to come up with a better idea.
So speaking of bad ideas, Weird, I understand that there are still people who haven't let go of the whole 3D printing is evil, it will result in anarchy, dogs and cats living together hysteria. And you've got a Fisk for this.
That's right. This is my final segment on the Weird Audio Fisk on 3D printing. So this week's Weird Audio Fisk comes from us from a listener, Josh, who found this on Massachusetts Attorney General Mara Healey's Twitter. This report comes from Now This News, which was formed by Kenneth Lair, who helped found the Huffington Post, and surprise, surprise, he's very anti-gun. This story is about 3D printing of firearms.
The Trump State Department has reached a settlement to allow a self-proclaimed anarchist to share 3D blueprints of dangerous guns like AR-15s with terrorists, criminals, minors, people with mental illness, and other people who just shouldn't have access to a firearm.
Or he's just freely disseminating information. Remember, while this directly relates to the Second Amendment in America, this is really a First Amendment issue. And while they make all these scary statements, what they want is restrictions for all of us.
People will be able to bring guns into airports, schools, federal buildings, courthouses, state and national parks. The list goes on and on.
They can do that now. Most of those places, they aren't even stopping them. In some places, it's even legal. Of course, he's implying that these guns, because they're plastic, they can't be detected. Will accept all the functional guns you can print, including the AR-15 he mentions, requires lots of metal parts. Even the 380 Liberator, which is mostly plastic and barely a functional firearm, needs a steel firing pin. Plus, many security places, like airports, use scanners that can pick up even plastic. Of course, making an untraceable gun is illegal, and has been since 1988. And what is being proposed is more laws, which I guess will make it more illegaler.
All of this is because the Trump administration quietly settled a lawsuit with Cody Wilson, a 3D gun creator who had sued the federal government for being forced to take down his downloadable 3D guns back in 2013.
Quietly settled a lawsuit? Man, for something that's so quiet, how come it's all I'm hearing about?
Wilson alleged that the government was violating his right to bear arms and his right to freely share information.
And he was right.
The settlement says 3D printing tutorials are approved for public release and can have unlimited distribution in any form imaginable.
This is computer code, not a gun. And manufacturing your own gun is perfectly legal in this country. Where's the problem here?
He's relaunching his website, and he hopes it will soon serve as a searchable database of user-generated guns and will allow individuals to print almost any firearm imaginable.
This guy is crapping his pants. I personally think that sounds awesome.
But that's incredibly dangerous. People have already used homemade weapons to kill. An individual went on a shooting spree in Santa Monica, California, with a homemade AR-15, killing 5 people. And just last year, in Northern California, another man killed 5 others with AR-15s, some of which were homemade.
The Santa Monica killer broke multiple laws in how he acquired his guns. Again, if what he did was already a crime, what does one more law do? Also, he used an 80% AR-15 lower, not a 3D printer. So why is this relevant in a report on 3D printer files? Unless, of course, your agenda is against all home-built guns. And on the second case, notice how he said some of his AR-15s were homemade. Meaning, even if he didn't have access to homemade guns, and again, we're not talking 3D printed guns, this means his other guns were not. So again, what are we doing here? Also, never mind that killing people is also illegal.
It's gonna get a whole lot worse. We must urge them to overcome the opposition of the NRA and strengthen the Undetectable Firearm Act of 1988. It's a bipartisan measure first signed into law by Ronald Reagan. They must mandate that detectable metal components be permanently affixed to any firearm.
This is the law I was mentioning before. And again, it's already illegal to make a gun that does not contain enough metal to be detected. So more laws are going to do what exactly?
And the federal government should also issue regulations to stop the manufacturing of these dangerous downloadable guns.
Good luck with that. It's not illegal to make a gun. It's not illegal to make a computer file. It's only illegal to distribute these files internationally, and that's really a liberal interpretation of the law. So these guys are seriously tilting at windmills. Those are your anti-gun talking points and a few rebuttals to combat them.
You know, I'm done with this. I'm tired. It's just they aren't doing anything new. And you really are just shooting fish in a barrel here. Can we just declare this dead and move on?
Yeah, I think so. I just want to again reiterate that every single one of these audio fisks that I did on 3D printing all referenced people that had used either an 80% build or a home build of some other kind in a crime. And again, if they're referencing that, they're not going after 3D printed guns. 3D printed guns are just the boogeyman. They're going after any sort of home building of firearms. They only want licensed FFLs to make firearms is their end goal here.
Well, no, I think their end goal is to remove guns from the population entirely. It's just the first step of many.
Yeah, well, I mean, they also want to get rid of FFLs. I mean, we had that little break in the middle where I had to cover the March for Our Lives Boston marching on Smith & Wesson and talking about the whole Smith & Wesson lawsuits that were designed to bankrupt gun companies. So literally, the people that under federal license make firearms, we want you bankrupt. So yeah, no, they want to end it all. Though they can't end them all because who's going to arm their bodyguards?
Well, they've never really been blessed with understanding of common sense or consequences.
Isn't that true?
David used to live in New York City, and now he lives in free America. In this segment of Gun Lovers and Other Strangers, he talks about the culture shock associated with moving to a free state.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. One thing that comes up these days in conversation is the issue of culture shock. Just over a year ago, we moved from the Capital District of New York, the least free state in the country according to www.freedominthe50states.org, to one of the most free states in the country. Since that time, friends and acquaintances both in New York and our new home have asked us about adjusting to this or that cultural or legal change. Generally speaking, it's a lot easier to get used to more freedom than it is to less. In the matter of firearms, for example, purchasing long guns is consistent between both old home and new. You fill out the 4473, wait for the background check to be run, and assuming you're approved, pay for your long gun and leave. Sure, the choice of long guns is much better here than it was in New York, but the process is practically the same. What changed significantly is the purchase of handguns and the acquisition of a carry permit. Looking back on this still makes me both smile and wince. In a previous segment, I told you about the process for getting a handgun carry license in New York State. To review, I had to fill out the permit paperwork, which includes 4 references of your good character, get fingerprinted, have passport-size photos taken, and write a check or money order. By state law, in New York, the permit must be processed by the judge within 6 months. These days, I've been told it often runs to over a year. Once you have your permit, the process of adding a pistol requires at least 1 visit to the county clerk's office, possibly an appearance before a judge, and can take anywhere from a couple of days to a couple of months, depending on which county you live in. By the way, when I say the pistol is added to your permit, I mean just that. New York is one of only 2 states that lists each handgun with details on the possessor's license. Also, keep in mind that in New York, you cannot purchase or even touch a handgun without a pistol license. That was then. In our new home, it took about 2 weeks from application to receipt of my handgun carry permit. While fingerprints and payment were still necessary, there was no good character requirement. This is one of the differences between may issue and shall issue states. The biggest difference was in purchasing a handgun. It's handled no differently here than a long gun. Fill out the 4473, wait for the background check to run, and assuming you're approved, pay for your handgun and leave. If you already have a carry license, you can load and holster your new handgun right then and there. As with most free states, you don't need a pistol license in order to purchase a handgun. By the way, I'm not recommending carrying a new pistol without cleaning and test firing it first. Speaking of carrying, both open and concealed carry are permitted in our new state of residence. In New York, only concealed carry is allowed, or perhaps tolerated is a better word. In New York, if your concealed handgun was accidentally exposed, you could be cited for brandishing and could even be arrested or have your license pulled by an overzealous judge. Here, open carry is not uncommon, and the most likely reaction, even from police officers, is some variation of, "What are you carrying?" The first time I open carried, I was asked exactly that question by the young lady who took my order when I stopped for lunch. She was approaching her 21st birthday and was looking forward to getting her carry license and the first handgun of her very own instead of using one of her dad's. Since there was no one in line behind me, we had a nice chat about handgun choices. Side note, I'd stopped for lunch at Chick-fil-A, a restaurant chain that is notoriously scarce in the Northeast. The novelty of being able to grab lunch there anytime I want, except Sundays, of course, still hasn't worn off. I love me some hate chicken. Another time I was running errands while open carrying when a fellow in a pickup truck slowed down to ask me if I was carrying a 1911. When I said yes, he asked if it was chambered in .45. When I said yes again, he said something like, "Right on!" smiled, waved, and drove on. I've already told you about some of the reactions in New York to my carrying a handgun, and none of them were anywhere near that positive. The difference in attitude makes for much less stress when carrying. I'm able to spend more attention on my surroundings and less on whether people have noticed my concealed handgun. Another difference in this state is what's called sport shooting. By that I mean recreational shooting on your own property. In New York State, unless you were way out in the country and had lots of land, this was pretty much a no-go. Here, unless you are in a municipality that expressly forbids sport shooting, you're good to go. In fact, the day the movers arrived with a truck full of our worldly possessions, one of our neighbors was doing some target shooting in their yard. When I spoke to a sheriff's deputy about shooting on my property, his advice was simply, don't be a jerk. He expanded on this as not shooting too early or too late in the day. There is, of course, some give and take. For example, in New York, gun-free signs put up by private individuals do not have force of law, while here they do. Thankfully, the law regarding these signs is very specific, and if the private property owner doesn't follow that law precisely, then the sign is not legally binding. If you do carry on posted private property, either accidentally or otherwise, the property owner can ask you to leave. If you refuse that request, then you're guilty of trespassing and can be arrested and your license suspended or revoked. Don't even get me started on the differences in taxes and the cost of living. Night and day doesn't even come close. In closing, as gun owners and small L libertarians, our new home is a much better fit for us than New York. Even though we miss our friends and family, overall this move was one of the best decisions we ever made. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
So I actually had the pleasure of meeting David last year when I was fleeing from Hurricane Irma, and just the amount of surprised joy on his face at his new home, it was just delightful. It was just, can you believe I get to live here? I can shoot in my backyard. It's awesome.
I can't even believe, like, I didn't become a gun nut until after I moved to Massachusetts from Maine. Oh. So, I mean, I see it, like, all the time. Like, every time I go back home, like, yeah, I see all the people. I got my carry permit. Oh, yeah, I'm going to go get this gun. And it's, yeah, it's no big deal. Someday I'll live in a free state.
But today is not that day.
No, today is not that day. And again, as I say to people, they're like, oh, why'd you move to Massachusetts? Just leave. I did not move to Massachusetts for the gun laws. I moved to Massachusetts for a large number of reasons, none of which were the gun laws. So,
or like when Jay Grazio was writing his Marooned blog and people would tell him, actually, they would ask him, why are you living there? Why don't you move? And he says, because staying here is cheaper than getting divorced. Because, you see, if he moved, his wife wouldn't. And the only reason, if I recall correctly, because it's been several years, but I think the only reason he did move was because his wife got sick at the place.
Yep. And also they moved to, she was actually able to relocate quite easily. The kids were a lot older and he got a nice dream job. So, yeah.
Maybe one day, Weird, the Jay Grazio dream will happen to you.
Yep. And also, I mean, probably also some of the part is family is like, I don't think this has been known, but like Jay's house was built off of a parcel of land that his dad gave to him. And so his kids' grandparents were right next door. That's a tough thing to move next to.
I mean, I don't blame him. I was just indicating why he was reluctant to move, even though he hated the place.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's true. But at the same time, like his town was a really, really nice town. There's pockets of Massachusetts that are not as awful as other parts of Massachusetts. When I lived in Medford, it was pretty bad. Now where I live, of which I do not disclose, it's actually a pretty nice town to live in, with the exception of the fact that there's Massachusetts all around it. After a few weeks away, the ACP house Dick returns with a Tales from the Trunk detailing the mishap with his ninja wagon and how one gets by when your detective car happens to be a rental.
Good evening, everybody. It's your favorite neighborhood trunk monkey back from a couple weeks hiatus. I've been burning my candle at both ends. Work has been extremely, extremely busy. I've been making good money, but I've had very little time to actually sit down and put my thoughts to paper, or in the case of the ACP podcast, to audio. So tonight, it's about 9 o'clock. and this is actually being recorded later than I liked it to. Sorry, Weird. Sorry, Aaron. It is Sunday night, and I'm rolling full speed in a rental car towards the almighty Detroit. For those that perhaps don't follow me on social media, late in August, the Ninja Wagon suffered a nearly lethal malfunction, tried to kill me. The hood latch blew on my car. While I was coming home down the freeway, 75 miles an hour, minding my own business. I had had a good day. It was a Monday, so it turned into this epic ball of suck. Had to get the Ninja Wagon towed to the dealership. A couple grand's worth of repair. Luckily, my deductible is very tiny. But it's still not money I had anticipated on spending. So if you like, I'll share a couple photos in the Facebook group, and I'll attach the link in the show notes, if you're so inclined. I'm safe. I've got a nice little sporty car to do my business, but it's forced me to change tack because this particular rental car has absolutely no tint, so I have to improvise with cover and concealment because I'm exposed to basically everything. There's literally no tint on any of this glass, so all the footage I have to get has to be perfectly timed, has to be concealed, and it's required some interesting improvisation. I won't be giving away any secrets, but suffice it to say, I've learned that my body is extremely flexible, but I usually pay for it at the end of the day. Things have been good. I can't complain too much. The Ninja has gotten back into theater work, because in my copious amounts of spare time, you know, what's wrong with, you know, taking on the lead role in the play Escanaba in the Moonlight? I'm probably certifiably bonkers, but earlier this last week, I got a call from an old friend. It's been about 8 years since I've been on stage, begging me to come audition for a part that she thought I would be perfect for. Competition was fierce, but by the time I had finished the audition, I was informed that I got the role. Yours truly, the quintessential prunk monkey, gets to play the part of Remnar Sodhi. So for just, you know, shits and giggles, you can find the movie Escanaba in the Moonlight, written by local playwright and Hollywood actor Jeff Daniels of Dumb and Dumber fame, and he was in that one television show that I cannot think of the name of, where he's part of the media or the press. But anyhow, Jeff is a local. He debuted the play in the late 90s at his theater in Chelsea, Michigan. So maybe, just maybe, the Trunk Monkey is going to meet somebody famous in November, because one would hope that maybe he comes to see a production of his play. And hopefully I don't butcher the role too badly. I've had to take on speech lessons in order to try and nail the quintessential Youper accent. So you betcha, and a lot of A, and all this other assorted puffery. But for recreation, it can't be beat. A, keeps me out of trouble, keeps me off the street 2-3 nights a week. I'll still be recording segments, and I'll still be providing adventures and mirthful commentary. So when this particular episode goes live, more than likely, Aaron, Weird, and myself will have recorded a segment at the Gun Rights Policy Conference, which is occurring next weekend in Chicago. I get to meet good old Aaron. I'm excited. Weird, not so much, but he's kind enough to put up with me. So I'll be taking the train into Chicago to meet up with fellow HDP folks. Should be a good time. This is my first major event as a gunny. I haven't been to any of the 2A rallies or anything else like that. I'm not nearly as famous as our gracious hostess, Aaron. But perhaps some of the fame will rub off on me. So expect pictures and commentary and giggles and otherwise good time. Again, tonight I'm headed out to Detroit. I've got a device that needs to go on a car in probably one of the worst neighborhoods in the city. I'm not looking forward to it. I've got another file I have to take care of at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. And if the device doesn't go on tonight, it's about 9 o'clock, as I mentioned, on a Sunday night. It means I'll have to go out again in the morning, probably 0400 hours, because this particular case has been worked several times, and it's in close proximity to known and frequently raided drug houses. There are spotters up and down the street. There are several abandoned buildings slash home. Plenty of squatters. Should be pretty sporting. I'll be wearing my vest in tonight. Of course, I'm loaded rock and roll. Not full battle rattle, because I am in a rental car. Last thing I need to do is punch holes with battle rattle in nice heated leather seats. So yeah, I got spoiled a little bit with a rental car. I accidentally figured out how to turn on the heated seats. I didn't know that was a function. And ain't nothing like roasty toasty ninja bits. So I'm in good spirits. I'm staying out of trouble. I'm not as groggy as my last segment, and for those of you that are brave enough to sit through it, I apologize. That was a really, really long day, and a really rough evening, but I'm better. Your trunk monkey is safe, there are more stories coming, and with any luck, I'll survive another night in the deep. I'll see you guys on the flip side. As always, be safe, stay ninja.
Trunk monkey throwing some shade. Because, oh yeah, I get to go meet Aaron. Yeah, and I guess Weird too.
Yeah, but we're sharing a room, so I get to snuggle.
It'll be a battle of the beards. If you snuggle too much, it might be like Velcro.
I think, doesn't he have more of like a mutton chop thing going on?
Well, but he wants to. Per the request of the theater director, his beard is only going to get larger for the role.
Oh yeah.
And he, I asked him if he said if he's going to have homeless man beard, and he said deer camp beard.
Ooh. It's the second week of deer camp. It's the greatest time of year.
Where's that from? I've never heard that before.
Oh geez. It might be a Maine thing. I don't know. The only time we leave the camp is when we go for beer. It's the second week at deer camp. It's the greatest time of year. It's just about like the only deer they got, somebody hit with their car. I don't know the rest of the song, but there were definitely times where a bunch of Mainers would get a few beers in them, and then that song would come out.
So, yeah, he does typically just have really impressive mutton chops. I mean, we aren't talking like Linoge quality mutton chops, but he's usually got the chops, but now he's going to be growing them out even thicker.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. So when you snuggle, make sure that your beards intertwine.
Well, I mean, it's just going to just happen. It's just like throwing your earbuds in your pocket. They tangle up, beards are going to intertwine.
Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcaliberspodcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like our hilarious blooper reels, the new ACP film tracks, ACP Mag Dump, and our CRKT knife giveaway.
You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
You can read more from me at my nerd blog, lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com, and my emergency preparedness blog, which I edit more than write for these days, bluecollarprepping.blogspot.com.
Thanks to Nate Spencer for our wonderful music.
I am going to be speaking on two panels this weekend, and he isn't speaking on any of them. Our fame and big dealness is assorted, and so is our podcast. Good night, everybody.
Good night.